Welcome back to the Can We Fix It podcast. I'm here with my resident hype man, Jason, the King Killer Royus. And today we are joined by former executive director and future representative, Jose Batista, who was recently in the news over some Providence External Review Authority horseshit. And is going to be sworn in January as the newly elected representative of District 12, South Providence. Jose, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rep. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so if you have any knowledge of this show, we don't take ourselves particularly seriously. And so I'm going to apologize in advance because I know that you're a professional and that you have to, like, be diplomatic and shit, but Jason and I don't. So we're going to try not to get you in too much trouble, but no promises.
Well, listen, after you get fired, I mean, how much more trouble
do you have? Dude, I literally used to say that all the time when people would be like, "More, you're being unprofessional." And I'd be like, "Well, I don't have a profession now, so I can fucking do that."
Oh my gosh.
So one of the reasons I wanted to do a para episode specifically is because I found out because of this news article that a lot of people, even Providence residents, don't really know what para is. So para stands for the Providence External Review Authority. And supposedly their job is to hold police accountable. So Jose, I'm going to give you what I think the job of para is, and then you tell me whether I'm accurate or not. So police officer Whiteman beats up a black citizen. There's footage of it on his body cam, and 14 people took videos of it in the street. Providence External Review Authority is in charge of watching those videos and being like, yep, he did hit that dude. That's a bummer. Is that pretty much all they're capable of? Because it doesn't feel like they've ever, like, successfully gotten anybody in trouble for shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough, right? There's been two iterations of para. The first one came about in 2002, and it met until 2008. And then it's really unclear why, but it just kind of stopped meeting after that. And so the second iteration of para, the one that I worked for, it started in 2018. I got hired in 2019. And, yeah, I think there's been plenty of frustrations on both sides. During both versions of para.
Oh, word. I thought you were, like, agreeing that cops had a valid point. And I was like, Jose, we're cutting this interview off right now.
No, I don't know why I said both sides. I meant both versions of para. Yeah. The early one and this one. Mm-hmm. So what is it supposed to do? I would say very broadly, you know, para is one of over 200 civilian oversight boards across the country and even in the world. Back before COVID, I went to a convention in Detroit, Michigan, and there were a bunch of, you know, hundreds of people that do this work, from Ferguson, Missouri, to Miami-Dade, to Jamaica, England. Like, this is work that's legit, you know what I mean? It's everywhere. And it's supposed to be the idea that people feel more comfortable filing a complaint against a police officer to people like them, as opposed to walking into the police building and filing a complaint that way. And so that's really the idea, right? So there's an oversight. We're a place where people can go file complaints about police, a place that can make policy recommendations and make things better that way, and a place that's supposed to be of the community, for the community, by the community, kind of thing. So that's the outline. That's what it's supposed to be. I'll toss it back to you on that.
Mm. So how many people are on the para board?
Nine.
And are any of them police officers?
One is a former police officer, and nobody else. And I think the statute, the city ordinance that creates para, says that there can't be more than one active law enforcement. Right? Like it limits it, but there's one person who's a former police officer on the board.
And so they chose the... So the person that's a former police officer, he was the head of the union, correct? Something like that?
At one point, yes.
Okay, so let's dig into, you know, what happened with you and what went down here before. Actually, no. Before we get into that, you said that the first iteration of Para was 2002, correct?
Yeah.
And that was after a black police officer who was off duty was shot and killed by a white police officer, correct?
Yeah, that was, I feel like I'm getting cross-examined here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, you're a lawyer. Yeah, probably.
No. It's funny because the simplest way to describe cross-examination when we're talking about other people is just you don't ask questions, you make statements, and you simply throw the word correct on the other. It was red, correct? And so you're just drilling me over here with these questions. I'm like, what's the answer? Let's go back. Give me that question one more time. But
so 2002, we started Para not because cops were beating up unarmed civilians, because they'd been doing that for many, 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 many years. It was only once a cop killed another cop that we decided to create a Providence External Review Authority.
Yeah, I mean, I was in sixth grade when that happened. A full disclosure, I remember watching the funeral of Cornell Young Jr. on TV. So I wasn't involved in that iteration, but I would say, yeah, that was definitely the event that sort of like made the cut slower and the board came through. But remember, again, that effort of police officers violating folks' civil rights that goes back at least to the 70s when Michael Van Leesten was filing the federal lawsuit to do something about it. And so the work is really rooted in the community. In 2002, it started up, and I know Professor Andy Horowitz from Ludlow Law School was a big part of it. I talked to him a lot about the process, and they actually got off the ground. They had complaints, they had hearings, and ultimately the union, the police union, sued Para, trying to kind of undermine its authority until the Supreme Court had to come in and say, yeah, Para is legit, Para can do what it's supposed to do, it has the power to question you and stuff like that. And so even though Para won that case in the Supreme Court and established that it's legality and it's appropriate, etc., it just stopped meeting after that, right? And there's a bunch of different versions and interpretations as to why, but the bottom line is it just doesn't heat anymore.
See, and I was explaining to my, or talking with my roommate, Alicia, and saying that, like, the thing that frustrates me is, like, I'm all for good laws and good policies. It just pisses me off that we wait until cops are affected to do them, mm-hmm. right? So, like, this past year at the, or I guess it was technically last year, in the State House, we passed a law that said if you're wrongfully imprisoned, then when you get out, we have to pay you for the time that you were in there. Now, over the years, how many hundreds of thousands of black and brown people have been wrongfully imprisoned and let out with like a fuck you, sorry, our bad? The only reason we passed this law is because a police officer was wrongfully imprisoned. And when a white police officer is wrongfully imprisoned, please let us hurry up and make a law to pay that man back. So I want to be clear. I don't necessarily disagree with the premises of these laws. It's just frustrating to me that the only time we take the initiative to do it is when a fucking cop gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, a difficult part of what we're going through now is that we are, you know, whether we're talking about this specific case or that it's taking place locally and actually, part of it is we're trying to reconcile what we see our values are, right? We believe in justice and all people being equal. And then we're watching these videos and we're not really called to action by them, right? And so that kind of, I agree, it's really tough to see what it takes to try to get some real policy wins.
So let's head into the big Para problem that went down with you. When did Jamal? Was it October?
Jamal Gonzalez. Yeah, that was what. Yeah, that was October. Yeah, right.
Yep, Sunday, October 18th.
Okay, so Sunday, October 18th, Jamal Gonzalez and several of his friends were out doing a city ride on their mopeds and ATVs. I get that city people have a lot of complaints about ATVs because with the plague going on, there's nothing more important than complaining about kids riding on ATVs and having a good time. That's neither here nor there. So they're driving around and Jamal Gonzalez is on a moped in the back of the gang. And I believe he flipped a police officer off.
Something like that.
And the police officer's response was to smash him with his vehicle. Do we have confirmation yet of whether he hit the kid or like just like made the kid hit something? Because everybody keeps making
I think what they're saying is that the cop hit the stop sign and the stop sign hit Jamal. I think that's is that right, Jose? Isn't that what they're saying?
Yeah, I hate to sound so kind of bland here, but I think the jury's still out in the investigation, and part of the frustration now has been several weeks, and there's not that much information coming through, right? And so that part of what we want to know. I don't know what they are saying. I've heard a bunch of different versions and interpretations of what happened. I mean, I think we want to see what the investigation is going to show, but part of the beginning of the end for me at Para was trying to deal with this case and argue to the police department that Para deserved to be at the table. You know, because I watched several of these press conferences and all these leaders kind of telling us how committed they were to professionalism and transparency in this investigation, and yet Carol was kind of on the outside looking in. And not only did we begin that way, but the more I knocked on the door saying, hey, you know, you might want to let us in there, the more pushback I got. And so that's when the ball started to unravel for me a little bit.
Really? I didn't know that the cops had the authority to say no to Para.
Well, that's part of my argument, right, that they don't. At totally the end, you know, there were a couple of letters exchanged between myself and the police department, like official big bad letters on the letterhead. They would put some pretty bold legal arguments on these papers. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were a judge at the same time, right? Like, they would say, well, the law means this, and therefore you can't be involved. And I'm like, okay, I think my argument is at least as good as yours, so why do you get to decide? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's deeply upsetting. And for me, like on a personal level, like I don't care if he flipped the cop off. I don't care if he, you know, made comments about the cop's mother. I don't care if he punched a kitten in the face. The punishment for those crimes is not a coma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure an unregistered moped is just a fucking ticket.
The best thing that I've seen on the internet, I don't know if it's in what it was, but something that I read on the internet, it said, hey, listen, guilty people shouldn't get shot either. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking about, you got a lot of these cases where folks are unarmed and they're the subject of violence, and it's terrible because they're unarmed and they're innocent. But hey, reminder, guilty people have rights too, right? You can't just, like, decide to execute the law just because they're guilty either. And in these cases, we're not talking about that, but you know, I think we kind of lose, sometimes we have these arguments and we kind of lose sense of where it is we need to begin, right?
Right. The idea is not that police shouldn't kill innocent people. It's that police shouldn't kill people.
Right.
We got to specify that.
Or take away their civil rights, right?
Right.
It's not just about the killing, but the killing is the one that hits the news and everything else. But part of my argument and part of my experience is that it's all the littlest things that happen every single day in the city of Providence, all the warrantless searches, all the disrespectful language, all the little things that build up over time and turn into like a situation like George Floyd, or turn into a situation like Eric Garner, right? Like people ask, like, how did this happen? Well, when you peel back the layers of the onion and you see what's been happening for the past 5, 10, 15 years, it's not so much of a surprise what happened.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's a really good way of putting it, and it's tragic, obviously, but it's something that we have to get more comfortable talking about. I don't even know where we start here. Like, there are a lot of people, you know, when I asked, you know, my friends and family and stuff, you know, what questions do you want to ask about Para? One of the questions was, you know, is it salvageable, or do we have to scrap it and start over again? And I would want to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, and that's funny. That's exactly what I was thinking. I know the title of the show is Can We Fix It? And for a long time, that's a question I asked myself with them. And ultimately, I guess the answer is, let me take a step back. I think we can fix it, right? I think Para can exist the same way I think people would talk about the House of Reps. Like, they think it's so broken. Like, can we fix it? I'm like, I think we can. It doesn't think it's going to be easy or fast, but we can. I think that I'm really proud of my tenure because I was able to see a lot of things and learn a lot of things, and hopefully the next person who's in those shoes, not necessarily that position, but like we can advance, we can continue advancing. But I think we can fix it. I think fixing it requires something that's really hard and something that a lot of people are not willing to do, and something that people were willing to fire me for because I was putting it in their face, and that is that we need to reconcile the fact. The difficult conversation is this one, right? We have our values, like I was saying earlier, and our, you know, that everybody should be treated fairly and X, Y, Z. And then we have our reality. And so many times when we see these bad acts by police officers, you know, the pushback you would hear is like, oh, well, you got to understand the reality. Like, for example, we thought this person had a gun, or we want to get guns off the street, or there's been more murders in progress now than ever. We need to be proactive. That word in the police department is a really red flag. When you hear proactive, like in context, proactive policing, put your seatbelt on. Mm-hmm. Somebody's rights are about to be violated. Right? Proactive is a neat way of saying, you know, the rules, we need the rules, we're just going to kind of skirt over here and do it anyway, you know?
I feel that. I keep thinking that cops nowadays are trying to act like Minority Report, and I just want to be like, yo, your job isn't to stop crime. Like, your job is not to prevent crime. Your job is to handle it once it's already happened.
Right. Well, it's really scary you say that, actually, because that convention I went, that I was telling you about, I saw about all the work taking place around the country with civil oversight and policing as well. And in places like Los Angeles, they are already implementing efforts to try to predict stuff that's going to happen. You know what I mean? It's really unnerving because, of course, everybody wants, you know, the argument is always going to be, well, don't you want public safety? Don't you want to stop crime? But the fine print is, yes, but at what cost? Right, and you're not willing to pay everything, like your privacy or mm-hmm. security, to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I live in a neighborhood that has historically been ignored by police officers for many, many years. And my councilwoman, Kat Kerwin, who is a badass mother, shut your mouth, gets a lot of crap. And people say, oh, the reason that cops don't show up to crimes in Smith Hill is because Kat Kerwin is antagonizing them. To which I say, I've lived in Smith Hill for 30 fucking years. Kat has been here for 10 minutes. What was their excuse for the other 29 years?
Yeah.
What was their excuse? And also, that's the only job where when people are mean to you, you can go, all right, fuck you. I'm just not going to do it anymore. Do you think that as a waitress, I ever got to look at a customer and be like, yeah, I don't like the way you treat me, so I'm just not going to bring you your food? That's not how anybody else's job works. Jason, you were going to say something?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I've heard that a lot, specifically with the whole cat situation. You know, the police officers, they have to often be reminded that they do not serve the city councilors, right? They serve the people. And so it's like when I go on Twitter and I see the FOP Twitter handle.
Oh my God, fuck them.
You know,
I can't.
You know, every time something happens in Providence,
they tweet out a crime and then they tag the city council.
Yeah.
So, and I'm always like, guys, just so you know, we haven't actually defunded you yet. So, like, you going on Twitter and being like, look at all these crimes, is actually not helping your case. Because you have 80% of the city budget right now, and you still can't fix this shit? Obviously, you're not capable.
Jose, your time in para, you know, do you feel like, what additional trainings, if needed, do you think the new recruits for the province police officers, what do you think the, you know, province police should be doing differently with training their new recruits?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I think we need to take a big step back. It's not even about training. It's not about any of that stuff. Like, we can't even get to that point. We need to have a fundamental conversation about what racism is and how it can be. I'll give you a funny story. I was on a Zoom call with a group that I won't name, and a pretty high ranking police officer happened to be a prominent police officer happened to be on that call. And you know, as you guys mentioned, I try to be professional and sometimes too diplomatic, and so I went during the call, but I did say the words institutional racism.
Oh no.
And then after the Zoom is over, this police officer, who I've never spoken to a day in my life on the phone, has my phone number and calls me and, you know, goes on to try to let you know, Jose, I want you to know, you know, I have a master's degree and I've read all these articles. Oh, wow. and I want you to know that there's no such thing as institutional racism at the Providence Police Department.
Jerk off emoji, jerk off emoji, jerk off emoji.
And then can. And so if I have to change anything, right, I'm not going to invest in any more training or cultural competency or conversations about race. We need to just go all the way back. And I don't mean this sarcastically or disrespectfully, but have a basic conversation about civics and history and understand how even some of the best intentioned things that we do today contribute to that racism, contribute to whatever. I'll give you an example. You know, police have all these objectives. They want to keep us safe and get guns off the street, but what we do, here's an example of institutional racism. Let's say the police crack down on this drug house in South Providence, for example, to use me. They crack down on the drug house, arrest everybody in there, vacate, and now the house is empty. However, that house now becomes labeled the drug house that we busted last week. And if the police happen to be patrolling that area and they see anybody walking in front of the house that's been drug busted a while ago, now they, although they shouldn't do this, they use that to create what they call reasonable suspicion. Oh, I saw this young man walking by this house. Based on my information and training, I knew that that house was once used for drug use. Therefore, I decided to stop this young man and doctor him. A lot of what we need to fix with the police system is that interaction, right? Why are police interacting with people? It's not that they shouldn't, but if we want to fix it, we have to answer that question, because that's where we have the conversations about social workers and group training, right? If we can reduce the amount of ways and the amount of times and the intensity with which the police interact with people, like the description I just gave you, that's going to go a long way to solving the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because how many of these traffic stops in the exchange of land? They start so innocently, and then it becomes a struggle for power, and then somebody ends up hurt or dead, right? And so are you saying, oh, my God, every single police officer hates black people, they're going to kill them? No. But you are trying to have the difficult conversation, you know, and that's a big part of why we haven't made progress yet.
Damn. Yeah, so one of my big issues, and I mean, I'll be honest, I'm an adorable white woman, and the likelihood of me getting my ass kicked by cops is pretty slim to none. Like, I can say that. I'm not a rep anymore. I don't have to be nice. But even I, particularly after becoming a rep, have had some really awful interactions with Providence police. I got into this car accident where this teenager was texting and driving. She hit me on Smith Street doing 50 miles an hour, and I was at a dead stop. So this girl fucked my shit up. So I'm sitting in my car. My whole body hurts. She blew up her own airbags. That's how fast she was going. They took her away in an ambulance. And the cop who responds to the call, right? Like, I'll be honest, I was crying. I was furious. It was a brand new car. It was destroyed. I was in pain. And this fucking dude comes up to my window and goes, hey, so now that you're a rep, you really got to talk to them about giving us more budget money for bulletproof vests and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, dude, like, I'm like still kind of in shock, right? Because like, I'm all fucked up. And I'm like, wait, what? And he's like, you're a rep, right? Your plates. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, like, I really need you to like, and I went, bro, like, I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but I'm not a rep right now. I'm a 25-year-old woman who was just in an incredibly serious car accident. People are being taken away in ambulances, and your first and only thought is, what can I do for you? Fuck that. Couple months later, there's a car accident outside my house. And listen, in the city, people take their cars real seriously, right? So the dude whose car got destroyed flipped the fuck out, stopped his car, went to the guy who hit him, tried to pull him out through his driver's window and just start smashing on him, right? So I'm like, all right, well, we got to call the cops, because I know in my neighborhood, nobody's going to do that, right? We're all just going to sit on our porches and watch and, you know, take bets on like who's going to win this fight.
Sounds like the North
End. Right. So I call the police. I let them know who I am. They come, they show up. And again, the first thing the cop says to me is, you know, because of the Community Safety Act, this shit is just going to keep happening. This is your guys' fault. First of all, it's a fucking car accident. I don't understand what the community said. Is it because they're both brown? They must have been criminals? Like, I don't know. But again, like, instead of doing their job, the first thing they want to do is make excuses as to why they can't. It's a weird world, and I don't understand why we literally pay these people to scare the shit out of us regularly. Like, here, take my tax money and then pull me over and point a gun at my face.
Jesus. Well, did you end up during the next session jumping on the budget question?
Fuck them. In the face. Right, I don't give a flying fuck. If it were up to me, police officers not only would get significantly less than 80% of the city budget, they would also be required to pay their own insurance so that when they shoot people, my tax dollars are not responsible for paying out the victims. Even a doctor has to provide their own insurance. Like, get your shit together, guys.
Jose, let me... go ahead.
I was going to say, that's a really good point about the insurance. I'm sure it's a scary idea for them because of all of the litigious activity that involves it. But, all other professionals have to do it. And that's one way I wish that we would kind of, like, normalize the police department because they sometimes kind of operate in this field that is exclusively unique to them and not in the real world like the rest of us. And so to your point, Mara, I'm sorry to hear about those interactions you had with the police. What would be ideal is if our city had a robust or even like moderately efficient civilian oversight board to which you can file these complaints and the police department would have to confront, right? Because how do those things keep on happening? Because they don't confront it.
Right, because I'm not going to go to the Providence Police Department and be like, yo, your officers are dickheads. They'll be like, what's your name and address so I can follow you home forever?
Yeah, I know. I mean, everybody has bad things. Everybody does bad things. But when you're in a position of power, like an elected official or a police officer, you have a gun in waist, like that, the expectations are higher. At least it should be higher. The story you were telling me reminded me of one of the complaints about a parent, right? Like, they're all public record. They've been requested several times. I'm not going to get into some detail for one thing sensitive, but I remember a young woman, a professional, driving home from work, and she had some issue with her license plate, and she was happy to cooperate with the police officers, but they were just, like, really, really strict on her and, you know, made her car get towed. The only way she could get home was to get into the police car. Like, that was the only way they were offering her. They're just treating her really badly in a situation where she didn't deserve it. Come to find out, the point that she was making about her license was right, and the police were wrong. And so she went through that whole ordeal for nothing, where she ended up crying and terrified. And again, this is somebody, like, you know, our age group, like, really patient, really nice. And she just gets treated like this, and you know, nothing came from it. The complaint was made and everything else. And just like, look, not everything is about shooting people and physically assaulting people. Sometimes it's just about the way you treat people. And that needs to be responded to as well. You know, it's really unfortunate.
Absolutely. And all right. For the last portion of this episode, I want us to play a little game called Dictator of Rhode Island. Okay. Because fuck the House and Senate, no offense, trying to get anything passed through there is insane. And trying to get past the police unions is insane. But pretend that...
Do I get to be the dictator?
Yeah. So we'll each take a turn, okay? So pretend that you were the dictator of Rhode Island and that you can make any measures that you want to unilaterally to fix the police relationship with the public. What are you going to do?
Wow.
Doesn't that feel really good just to think about that? I play this game all the time.
I mean, I have several ideas, and I think, man, this is really fun. I wish I had prepared for this. You should have told me this in advance. I would have, like, all white people. I would do a couple of things. Number one, I would create one training academy for the whole state, or at least some version of a training academy for the whole state, because right now there's three. There's the state police, the Providence Police,
and RIMPA, Rhode Island Municipal Police Academy.
And I think one, if we're going to implement programs and reforms, it makes sense to have everybody in the same page, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, every city can do whatever they want afterward or whatever, but at least a core program would be the same for everybody. Number two, I would make mandatory what we call on the law practice CLE, continuous learning education, continuous training, but basically some sort of training, right? They don't do ongoing training after the fact. And in every profession, you have that, right? You have to keep on, you have to keep up with the standards and norms and everything else.
Side note, just let me interrupt you for a second. What's fucked up is the police do continue training, but the only thing they train on annually is shooting people, just so we're clear.
Right.
They have to retrain on shooting people every year.
Well, yeah, and so there's so much opportunity to learn things and practice things and everything else. Number three, I would create a statewide terror. It was hard enough to do it in Providence. I think it's probably the best way to get the sort of money and capacity you need for terror to work, which is to make it a statewide agency. And then, you know, that's just the surface stuff. Now we get into the fun stuff. There's this idea in the law called qualified immunity, which makes it really, really hard to hold police accountable. So, like, basically, they can get away with, you know, punching somebody in the face, so long as you can say, oh, well, it was because I thought officer safety something else. Like, it would be really,
I felt like my life was in danger. Isn't that the line they always use?
You know, and that, let me be clear, and this is part of my frustration with this argument, right? Whenever you say something like this, it's not, Jose, the next day you're going to read in the newspaper, Jose Batista is advocating for the assault and the danger of police officers. Absolutely not, right? In no way, shape, or form.
No, dictator Batista is.
Right. So some statewide terror, and then really getting into the nitty-gritty policy, right? Like, police officers conduct illegal warrantless searches every single day. Police abuse their power and mistreat people every single day. And it's not insulting or radical to say that, right? Like, we need to, it's like folks who want to lose weight and you're like, oh, why don't I do it? It's because you're not going to the gym, right? Like, you need to confront yourself and have that difficult conversation if you don't want to have it. Right, and it's one thing if you're struggling to have it in your own personal life. It's another thing if you hold public office or a public servant like police are.
Yeah, that's
the problem. Jose, let me ask you a question. The whole little gym comment that you made, was that like a shot at me?
I was more of Ben Roethlisberger. He's kind of got this beer belly going on. You might want to look into that very statue.
Oh my God, you guys are so mean to each other. All right. Jason, if you were dictator of Rhode Island, what police reforms would you instate?
Wait, I had so many more.
I know, but you, all right. Well, there was a coup. Jason took over with the military. You're out now. Grow your little dictator beard and you're going to be fine. Jason.
That's right. There was a coup. I had more legit votes, more legal votes than you, and now I took over. See how that works? I don't know.
Just wait until the mail ballots come in, Jason. Wait until the mail ballots come in.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll overturn it.
That's a really good question. I think what I would really do is just cut the budget for the state police, Providence police, just policing in general, right? Like, there's obviously studies that show that, you know, if we can hire, you know, some social workers and have them get trained and be a part of some sort of police academy or whatever the training would be, policing would be a lot better, right? I don't think a police officer should come to, you know, a dispute of a verbal dispute or something like that. Like, I just think a lot of times, I mean, especially for someone that lives in Providence and any person lives in their cities, we look at police officers like, you know, they're very dangerous and we're almost scared of them. And at times that they incite, you know, violence, you know, instead of really calming shit down. And so I think like certain incidents like that, I think, you know, policing is not necessary. But I don't know, that's a really good question. And I just want to thank Moore for throwing that out to me. And I you know, I'm going to be so pissed, Jose, if, you know, Moore has like a whole like 5-point plan as to what she would do as a dictator.
Okay. Well, so in my defense, I've been thinking about police reform for many, 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 many years. One of the most, one of my boyfriends, back in my early 20s, used to take a taxi to work every day because he owned his own car and discovered that it was more cost effective for him to take a taxi than it was for him to get pulled over every day on his way to work and be late to work and lose hours. It was more cost effective for him to take a taxi than it was to get, you know, a 5-day tag on a taillight, a 5-day tag on, you know, sometimes they'll even be like, oh, that thing hanging from your rear view is impeding your visibility. Like, just stupid shit, right? Like, he was getting thousands of dollars worth of dumb fuck tickets for a year before I was like, fuck it, I'll just take an Uber. Like, I don't care. You know what I mean? It's not worth it for me. So this is something that I've been thinking about for a really long time. And I mean, obviously it goes without saying he was black. I don't think there was a white dude that gets pulled over every day. Like, that's part of the systemic racism problem that, you know, we're talking about. For me, it would be, and I know leftists don't love when I say things like this, but it's really hard to expect police to do a good job when they have so many fucking jobs. They have to take care of homeless people. They have to take care of drug overdoses. They have to handle domestic violence. They have to handle robberies. They have to handle car accidents. They have to handle traffic violations. Like, that's an insane amount of stuff for one person to do well. For me, I would say, I think that one of the most dangerous things for police officers and civilians alike are traffic stops. Cops feel some sort of way when you got a couple ton weapon that you could run them over with. And people feel some sort of way seeing all these videos of cop ripping people out of their driver's windows. That was one of the reasons that I was pro speeding camera, right? Is because if you've got a speeding camera, you know what you're not going to have? A physical police officer. And I'm of the mindset that all traffic violations should be camera related. You know what I mean? You know, you run a red light and we take a picture of your license plate. We can easily zoom in and check if your registration is up to date and your inspection is up to date. And we just mail you a fucking ticket. There's just a lot of jobs that I don't think police should be doing.
That's a really good idea.
I also think that, like, you know, traffic accidents, there's no reason that a police officer needs to be the one to file those reports. I mean, we could put that onto an insurance company. We could put that onto any number of things.
Let me put my plaintiff's lawyer hat on and switch back on that one a little bit and just tell you the only reason why, not necessarily advocating that it should be a police, but we need to think about the substitute, because there's so many disputes that take place in arguments. And in theory, what a police officer is supposed to do is almost like be the judge. And so they write in their report, okay, I got to the scene, this person told me this, this person told me that. And then the insurance depends on that to decide who's responsible for it. And so, you know, it'd be a great idea not to make police officers do it. You need some sort of person to do that, just because there's so many questions coming up.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not suggesting that these jobs just stop being done. I think that social workers are the people who should be dealing with the homeless. I think that, you know, marriage counselors are the people who should be dealing with domestic violence and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's one of my big ones. Number two, I already mentioned insurance. I mean, I think they need to carry their own insurance. And I think that the Bill of Rights is a big issue. The Law Enforcement Bill of Rights.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. I mean, look at this fact, right? Like, the video that I released, that police officer in question is still employed, was getting paid for 6 months, and his lawyer in the final motion that he should get paid. And, you know, he's been sitting at home getting paid for 6 months, and I got fired until 6 days. Right.
I gotta say, I loved your comparison when everybody was calling for you to be fired. And you were like, wait, I don't get like a mandated 6-month review. I don't get to have, you know, all the things that cops get to have before they get fired. I should just get fired immediately. Like, that was salty and I loved it.
But that was because the union said it.
Right.
And they used the word, they used the word immediately. They had to use the word immediately. I'm like, really? You're gonna call it immediately? And so, you know, if there's any silver lining in all this, is that I'm glad that people get to have a conversation about it. So I got one more policy thing. Can I be dictator again real quick for a minute?
Fine. No, he's nice and he just lost his job. Give him a little dictator pity. All for it.
Okay.
just one more. I think really, right? So it sounds silly, but if I could do one thing and, you know, improve kind of the way we think about policing in some way, shape, or form, I would make the following exercise a part of the police academy, especially if everybody's going to get the same one. And it's something that I ran on the internet, and it's really short, but it's brilliant, right? And it summarizes what I think the fundamental problem in policing in America is. And the exercise is to think about the following and discuss it. we think about the word respect in our society in at least one or two ways. The respect we give people in positions of power, like our parents or a boss or somebody like that, and the respect that we give each other simply just as human beings, right? Like as colleagues or people who walk in the street. And sometimes what you have happen is somebody in a position of power will tell somebody who's not in a position of power, if you don't respect me, I won't respect you.
Mm.
And what they're saying, whether they realize it or not, whether they mean it or not, whether they're a good person or whatever else, if you don't recognize my authority, I won't recognize the fact that you're a person. And that's what you see happen in traffic stops all the time. The police officers are on shaky law as it is, stopping people for things that you're saying that we were just talking about moments ago, for things they shouldn't be stopping them for. And what they're saying is, if you don't respect my authority, whether I'm legal or not, or this or that, I'm not even going to respect you personally. And that's where you get people ripped out of cars, right? So if we can confront that, that's going to go a long way to fixing problems.
See, when I was a kid, there was this thing that they used to make Providence cops do, where for the first couple of years on the beat, they would make them be bicycle cops, because nobody fucking respects a bicycle cop. So, like, you would have to do that thing where you just, like, ride your bike into somebody's driveway and be like, please stop. And it did kind of give, like, a level of humility to the job where, you know, day one that you get your badge, you're not automatically going to be a piece of shit. Like,
I mean, also, I mean, if we had police officers that actually lived in Providence, right?
Mm.
Policing might be a little bit different.
If we had people have to live in the community that they policed, it's way different to arrest somebody when you know you got to see them at the supermarket next week. It's way different to call somebody the N-word or, like, all sorts of crazy shit when you know that you're going to, like, bump into them at the fucking gas station. Now, if you live in East Greenwich and you're a Providence cop, you have no beef arresting all these people around here because you don't have to fucking live with them later.
I heard a city council person tell me once, a former city council person, say to me that they sat in on an interview to a police officer, and they asked him, they're like, oh, you live in, you know, whatever, North Kingstown. Why do you want to be a police officer in Providence? And their response was, oh, well, Providence is where the action is.
Oh my God.
And so I'm thinking, I'm like, listen, this is not some Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah. It's not Call of Duty. Like, Jesus.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I get that. My kid's dad is a Cumberland police officer, and he was once called to chase a goose out of someone's driveway. And I was like, can you imagine calling a fucking Providence cop and being like, can you come chase this goose? They'd be like, fuck you, get out of here. Like,
yeah.
Oh man. Listen, there's one other thing that I just want to point out, just so that the public all understands and knows. Sergeant Hanley, the police officer whose offensive video you leaked, right after you, and just so we're clear, you didn't edit the video, you didn't, like, fuck with the video. All you did was show a video of what he did, right? And he's like, fuck this. You guys need to drop charges against me because now there's no way that I'm going to get an unbiased jury. So, and the way that I hear that is everybody saw me acting like a piece of shit. And now everybody is going to be tainted into thinking I'm a piece of shit. Yes, sir. Because you are a piece of shit. So what is, like, the legal background on that? Like, is that why they didn't want you to release it?
I think, in my honest opinion, and I say this with all due respect, I think that was the excuse, the most convenient excuse that everyone could use for not releasing it. Because let's be real, the George Floyd video is out. That's, you know, those folks are going to have a trial. And by the way, they're going to have a very high-profile murder trial, and I don't see them dismissing the case because the video's not out.
Right.
In theory, I mean, let me put this out there, right, because I don't mean to be a hypocrite. Before I was a para, I was a defense attorney, and I believe 1,000% in due process rights and not making trials unfair. I wish that our society cared the same about the trials of young black people that have been protecting the trial of a white police officer, right? I mean, it's incredible. They do prejudicial stuff all the time. So that's the argument. They'll be prejudiced there, and it's not going to be fair, but I think that's a really flimsy argument. And I think, again, it's the resistance to having to confront what happened. If you can hide it, then you don't confront it as well as that.
Yeah.
And the jurors, they're going to watch the video regardless, and they would have watched the video regardless if you put it out or not, right?
Yeah, and the fact that he's charged with a misdemeanor makes it so that the jury, quote-unquote, in his trial is not going to be a jury, it's going to be the judge. So if you're saying, oh, the jury's not going to be fair, what you're saying is the judge is not going to be fair, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a really, that's a difference that should be highlighted.
And what Hanley's getting charged for is essentially, I think what he's essentially getting charged for is basically pouring a glass of water on someone, right?
No, well, that's not what he's being charged for.
No, he's not being charged for, but I mean, the equivalent, that's the equivalent of what
his... Yeah, so I have cases, and you see some of the young folks who are lawyers these days post the same thing about their cases. I've had a case where someone, did spill like a glass of soda on somebody, and they got charged with the same thing that Sergeant Hill is charged with now. One count, misdemeanor, simple assault. And that's a whole other angle to what happened, a part of what I was trying to draw attention to. And I'm not doing it with name calling or exaggerating or anything else. I'm just saying, like, holy moly, this is a really serious incident. And I think at a minimum, there's an important conversation that our society needs to have about the facts of this case and how our criminal justice system works. Because I and many lawyers can sit down and talk to you for hours about cases that they've had where their client has done significantly less than this particular individual did and got charged with something way heavier. And so, I've only been an attorney for 5 years. I was a B student in law school. I'm not some know-it-all. But in my capacity as executive director, what I was trying to say was like, holy, you know what, guys, we need to stop and have a conversation about this. And sadly, that door was shut in my face, not only by the police department, but by the entire law enforcement apparatus and ultimately the parent board. Like, nobody wanted to have that conversation such that they would rather fire me instead of have it. But now that frees me up to have it all I want.
Right. And that's why we have you here now, because we do need to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Jose, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for doing the brave thing that was clearly not the easy thing. And as somebody who recently lost her job for being a mouthy bitch, it is so much more fun on the outside because you know how everything works and then you can tell everybody.
But I'm not going to lie. One of the first things I thought when I got fired was, well, I get to be like Maura now.
I'm not going to lie. Like, it is mad fun just being able to be like, everything is terrible. Your government is trash. Like, I felt it for 4 years, but like being able to say it out loud feels good.
You got to turn a negative into a positive, like Biggie Small says.
Exactly. So before we go, what do you think you're going to do now? Like, do you think that are you looking for something similar? Are you just going to focus on being a rep? Like, what's your game plan? You're just going to be unemployed like me? We could be hobos together.
Well, my immediate plan is to watch the Patriots win on this afternoon. Shout out to Jason. I think from a professional standpoint, for the rest of 2020, I'm just kind of going to chill out and take inventory. I've been a lawyer for 5 years. On the one hand, I've loved every single day and every single job between being a public defender, having my own office on Broad Street, and now this. But on the other hand, I feel like there's been a train that's been going at a million miles an hour, and you sprinkle a little summer campaign on top just to kind of top things off, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna chill out for the rest of 2020. I'm really excited about being a rep. I want to dig into the budget and actually going to schedule some time to catch up with you, rep, and get some advice on how to approach this thing, right? Because it's a really big budget. It's a really big job. So I'm going to focus on being the best rep I can be. If I had to guess right now, I'm assuming my next job, if you will, would obviously be practicing law. But you know, I'm open. I'm open about it. I don't want to make any quick decisions, so I'm just going to take a minute to chill out and see what happens next.
Word. Well, remember that if you ever want to share any anonymous tips, you have a delightful podcast where I will not say your name. Again, that was a future representative Jose Batista and former executive director of Providence External Review Authority. Thank you so much for being on. Jason, my hype man, you got anything you want to plug?
No. The Pittsburgh Steelers are playing right now, so I should probably start heading out soon because, unlike the Patriots, my team wins. So.
Okay, well, you guys can have your little football argument. In the meantime, I, as always, am going to demand that you guys visit www.patreon.com/canwefixit to catch up on previous episodes, to join in on polls for future episodes, and to give us a little bit of feedback on what kind of things you're looking to know more about. We are officially up on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and all of our video podcasts are now up on the Uprise YouTube channel. So please feel free to subscribe to all that fun stuff. Share this episode with your friends. It's very important that people of Rhode Island know what PARA does and, I mean, what it doesn't do, if we're being honest. Stay safe. Wash your fucking hands. If I find out that any of you went to a real Thanksgiving, you're dead to me. Go be a good neighbor.